Between the time when wargamers played with chainmail and the rise of the Wizards of the Coast, there was an age of gamers. And unto this, Gygax, destined to bear the crown jewel of TSR upon a troubled brow, to show you all how to roll for initiative.
The Roll for Initiative podcast, issue number 78. I'm DM Vince, sitting alongside DM Nick.
Hey, everybody.
DM Matt.
How's it going, everyone?
And Bismarcky, I mean, DM Will.
What's up?
Bismarcky. Yeah. We're still going with that, huh?
Hey, it's funny. Why not?
Okay.
So, what's the big news going on right now? The book release of the first edition reprints held back. So what are we looking at? June now, Will, you were just saying?
Well, I went to the gaming store yesterday. I ran a game for about 6 hours, and I was speaking to one of the employees down there, and it all came down to it that the books will not be in the gaming store until July, to the month of July.
Wow.
Interesting. I just thought of something, why that might be going on. One, it might be because Gen Con. I bet you they're going to print up a whole bunch of extra copies and have it at Gen Con there.
That'd be smart. Release it at Gen Con.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Origins. Release it at Origins, too, right?
Origins is at the beginning of June. So.
Yeah, it may be beginning of June, and I already had a whole big reason why they shouldn't have moved it to that date.
Yeah, a lot of people do. No one was happy between Marcon being forced out of their spot they've had for umpteen years. And then scheduling it the weekend of at least it wasn't Memorial Day weekend like they originally planned. They were,
but the problem was they still have a lot of the teachers and students won't be able to make it because school is still in session here.
Right.
Oh, good job, guys.
Yeah. And then they also this year raised the prices of the day passes.
Really?
Yeah, the day pass was originally $5, got you in the exhibit hall, the auction, so you could wander around and just check out everything without having to drop $35, $40. Now that day pass is $10, so they doubled the price of a single-person day pass.
Wow.
They used to be able to get a family of four in for $10.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's $15, so that's not too bad if you get a group of four people, because I don't think they're that picky on... Well, are you all blood related? So if you have a group of four,
you have birth certificates.
Exactly. You don't
your
look.
Us, please.
Yes, the papers.
Card.
So, yeah.
All right. So they're going to be pushed back. Maybe we'll see a release at Gen Con. Well, who knows what's going on?
All I know is I forked out my money already. I still have to wait. I'm sad.
Well, I haven't forked out my money yet, and pushing it back to July actually kind of helps me. So.
Yeah. Nick, you already have the book sitting on your shelf. Be quiet.
But
he doesn't have the new pretty cover.
And crisp new white pages. And
Perhaps they'll be acid-free pages so they won't turn yellow over time.
Okay? I'm a collector, okay?
I know.
It's just one of those things. I just, you know.
All right, let's move on. Since I can't move things on, let's head over to Stars. Speaking of Stars.
Yeah, okay, over our starred reviews at iTunes for Roll for Initiative. If you want to give us a starred review, head on over there and type in Roll for Initiative or RFI and in the search, and it'll bring us up there, and you can link right to us. You can subscribe to us for free.
RFI won't work, Nick.
It won't?
No.
Okay, how about Roll for Initiative?
That works.
Okay, that'll work.
Yeah.
So type in Roll for Initiative, and then you can subscribe to us free.
Oh.
You can also contact us at rfistaff@gmail.com, and also you can join us on Facebook, so you can get to us there. So on to our reviews. We got four reviews.
Four?
Four.
Wow.
Four, yes. And the first one... I hate to say it, it's a one-star review, gentlemen.
Aww. Yeah.
By someone named Dirt Skull, and he gives us one star. He says, the main host is annoying. He says, if the old host Jason had teamed up with Nick and Will, the show would be tops. The host Vince adds nothing to the conversation, never comes prepared, always go off subject, and interjects with annoying quips.
Oh, here's a tip. Don't listen.
Yeah, there you go. In his defense, he also does another podcast. And, you know, most of us, we have lives outside of this. So, you know, he's working and doing other things. And I, you know, I think he does an exemplary job. That's just my two coppers.
Well, I look at it like this, though. I mean, you know, you got someone, you know, taking his personal time. And I think that time is very important for any person involved. And for someone to take time out of their own lives and family lives and all that stuff and everything to contribute to the old game in school mentality. I mean, you can't hate a guy for that. You can't.
Just someone with too much time on their hands has nothing better to do than just blast the podcast down. That's all.
At this point, I kind of
there you go.
Yeah. At this point, I want to go through all the like negative reviews because okay, we have Vince who's annoying. We have Will who reads through a book.
Yeah.
Then we have Nick. What was it? The voices that was annoying someone? I can't remember.
No, I remember one time someone said about me that it was a really long one. It was like several paragraphs. Someone said something about me like he has to find his voice. He seems kind of like stuttering along. I'm like, okay, whatever.
Right. Yes. So far, the only person to come through unscathed in these one-star reviews is me. I guess I'm rather inoffensive and just kind of
hold
there.
On a second. I can write a review about Matt.
Okay.
Matt. Oh, well, actually, I think they already did a negative review on you, Matt, because they mentioned everyone except you in this complaint.
Right.
So they're ignoring you. They just
Could it be Matt writing these reviews?
Anyway, moving right along, we have another...
One last thing before we move on.
Oh, right. I'm
just
sorry.
Wanted to say that Jason left the podcast on his own. He's not coming back, so... The more you keep saying bring Jason back is not going to bring him back. Sorry.
Right. He already said that he's had other things to do. It kept the being feeling like a chore to him and wasn't fun. So he bowed out on his own. Okay, folks, that's the honest to goodness truth. Okay. And we respect Jason for that. And we know I'm pretty sure he still listens from time to time and that's cool. So hi, Jason. And, you know, hope you're doing well. So there you go.
Well, I'm glad he left. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here.
Okay.
I'm just joking. I'm just pulling some legs. Good Lord.
Okay. Right here, baby.
Anyway, the other one we have, here we go. It's by, I think, Gladius.
Gladius.
It's a 5-star review. It says, well produced and informative. It says, love the show, guys.
Yeah.
The show is entertaining and informative. I wait for every week's episode with great anticipation. Unfortunately, I can only call myself a GM as I'm running a Pathfinder game for my 3 preteen kiddos. Can't wait for the 1E reprints coming out in April. Oops. Then yeah. I will graduate to DM, of course, with your guys' approval. Keep up the fantastic work. Well, thank you, Gladius. And you're going to have to wait a little bit longer on those reprints. But that's cool that you're trying to get your other preteen kiddos into a first edition. And, you know, I think Pathfinder is a pretty cool game in itself. I think it's pretty cool. So,
I can tell you this, though. You are still a DM.
Mm-hmm.
A Dungeon Master is not exclusive to Dungeons & Dragons. If you're playing a fantasy role-playing game, Pathfinder being one of them, you're a dungeon master.
There you go.
Yeah, just don't let the intellectual property lawyers hear you say that, though.
Yeah, they might
true
sue us for that. So
yeah, so okay.
Oh my Lord,
we got to
sue me.
All right, our next review is from DM Cade, 5-star review. He says, "Get to the choppa." It's a me, Mario.
Mario, okay.
It's a me, Mario. It's this awesome podcast. I've been listening since nearly day one. This is something that could play on the radio.
Wow.
Thank you.
If you know which radio station it should play on, please let us know.
Yeah. You might get us for a bunch of schmoes that we are. Audio quality and pacing is top notch. These guys know what they are talking about. If you're into old school games, then you have hit the jackpot. Cha-ching! The cha-ching was me. Oh, anyway, so well, they could be in
the get to the chopper.
Yeah, it's it. Get to the chopper. It's and then after that says, "It's a me, Mario." I love that. That's awesome. Great. DMK, you are most cool. Thank you. And our last 5-star review is from John the Roger, and he says, "Great show." I think I might know who. I think I might know who this is.
Oh yeah, who is it? Yeah.
No, John the Roger. Okay, it's not who I think it is. Never mind. This show has really take off. It should be taken off, but that's okay. Since the departure of Jason, the show became top notch. Will is very funny, and he does sound like the rapper Biz Markie.
Oh my God!
Go Will.
You guys are killing it.
Now on to the other hosts. Matt is good, but needs to speak up more. More Matt. Ooh. Nick is solid as ever, though he does sound a bit like that Blackstone guy. Hey, where did he go? and on to Vince, the host of this show. Thank you for creating it, and I love to hear the stories you tell about the old days more than hearing about some boring rule. It's funny. Anyone who bashed this show in the past, you could tell, for they kicked off the RFI forums. So they acted like a child, put a star review up. Anyhow, thanks.
Wow.
So there. Thank you, John the Roger.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there. So like we always said before, we always read the reviews, no matter if they're 1-star, 3, 5-star, whatever. We read them. We always try to take whatever it is into consideration, short of like, you know, like booting the creator of the darn thing. So anyway, thank you very all. That's
but if we did boot the creator, we'd be following the tradition set by TSR, though.
Yeah, it's true.
But no. No.
So which one of us wants to be Lorraine?
Oh, God.
I'm sorry. I'm too skinny.
Thank you. I just threw up in my mouth a little.
I have really off-topic stories about a printer cartridge I bought the other day. Oh, wait, never mind.
No, Vince, no, you get to go, my friend. You got your supporters out there, and that's all that matters. And you know what? I'm going to YouTube later. I'm going to look up this Biz Markie dude, and I'm going to find if he really speaks like me.
Anyway, heading over to Facebook, we're still hovering below that 1,000 mark, waiting for more thousands of people to sign up.
Hovering.
We want the likes. Hovering. There was a kind of a poll we put up the other day. If we gave you a +2 sword at level 1 and said the only way you can keep it is if you came up with a clever name, what would it be? Let's run down the line and see what you guys think. Nick, what would you name your sword?
+2 sword. And then the only way I could keep it is if I gave it a really clever name.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy. You really got me on this one.
All right, we'll come back to you. Will?
Yeah, come back to me on that.
Oh, for some reason, I was listening to some Ozzy Osbourne, so the first thing that came to my mind was Paranoid.
Yeah, I mean, for whatever reason, I think it would just be so amusing if it was an intelligent sword, if it had the personality of Marvin from The Hitchhiker's Guide. Why must we kill another orc?
What's the point? I have the ego of 27. What's the point?
Oh, boy.
Is it an intelligent sword? That's a good question. Is this sword intelligent?
Sword.
It is?
Some of the names people put on here are the Orc Pick, the Sex Caliber.
I like that.
Sword Scarfers, here's your +2. If it's a girl's name, Mom, I'd go with Ice Ice Bladey. Backbiter, Fang Slayer. Someone, I like this one, Slap Chop.
Wait a minute. That's like, isn't that like a real, like, as seen on TV kind of thing? Slap?
Yes, it is. Slap Chop!
Vince something, or Vince Scortho, whatever it is. No, it's Ghostbuster, sorry.
Vince Scortho, Keymaster Gozer.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Zool!
I can't think of a clever name. I'm sorry. I'm drawing a blank here. I'll call it blank.
Okay.
I'm going to call it blank.
The best one I've seen so far would be, I would name it Kindness because I love killing people with kindness.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. I saw that. That was pretty good.
Yeah. So you can too. We'll have your comments read from Facebook. Just join up and like it and comments. A question that was on iTunes was from Chris asking if iTunes was more organized so people can find shows. We have no control over that. That's iTunes. It's its own beast.
Yeah. What you have to do is when you search for our show, then if you sort by release date, let's see. Okay, when you do the initial search for our show, you have the little icon and it has like five shows. Those are
our right. If it shows the most recent ones.
Right. If you click on the actual show name, like the Roll for Initiative Advanced Dungeons and Dragons, from that, you'll get the master list of all of our episodes in reverse chronological order. So it'll have the newest show on top going down.
You can click on the dragon. It'll do that too.
Yep. So that's what you want to do. And as of right now, we have, while we may be on issue 78, we actually have 98 different shows on our.
That's because of the Gen Con specials Jason released 2 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Also,
our special inserts we've done. Yeah, all those special inserts.
That's the difference with Gen Con. I just woke up. I'm looking out the window. Okay, see you later. I'm like, what the heck?
It's like, okay.
Yes.
Anyway. All right, so Facebook.com/RFI podcast, and we'll head over to Sage Advice.
Master, they're at the gates again. Master, it looks like another band of adventurers.
Adventurers again? Always the same. Coming to me for sage advice.
Sage advice. This week we have a voicemail and an email. If you'd like to voice your opinion, 570-865-4210, the hotline. First, we'll go with the voicemail and mute your microphones. I'll hit a play.
Hi, guys. This is PM Cal. Luckily, I have not surprised anyone again with that. Listen, I was just listening to your latest episode on Rolled Dwarves, and I have to say it really struck me as a reminder of how my playgroup decided they started running dwarves, which is very much like, say, an Orthodox Jewish community. It's very clan-based, very clan-oriented. Your lineage is traced through your mother. They have very similar sort of taboos. They're very isolationist. They're always sort of preparing for the worst because they're so used to it. And the way we solve sort of that, like, and, you know, how do you, like Will brought up, how do you keep the genetic pool diverse was basically, while there is no marriage between clans, that does not mean that there isn't marriage between, you know, dwarves who have renounced a clan and joined their clan. Thus, you can sort of, you know, pick up some outcasts and convert them or other people. And it's a really tough process and really hard to go through. And if you do it, however, though, you get the full clan backing you. So it led to some interesting situations where you had PCs that were willing to try and become honorary dwarves of the clan. However, it's not just necessarily honorary. You basically go through all the same rights as a clan member. Yeah, you know, until finally, you know, including you have to grow your beard out, know all the different parts of the dwarven text, and it really sort of, it becomes this really good, easy way to do some good role-playing and have some things to start with. Of course, it made dwarven clerics very interesting, because most of them came off more as, sort of, say, like, inquisitors or rabbis, and it worked really nicely. So, yeah, that's just my 2 cents, and keep it original, keep it old school, and keep it coming, please. Thanks a bunch. Bye.
Okay.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you this, from a Jewish perspective, since I am Jewish, mm-hmm. I agree with a lot of the analogies that he attributes to my culture and that of the dwarven cultures that was spoken in the Roll 8 supplement. And, you know, honestly, when I play a dwarf, I play dwarves exactly like how he stated, and I also put a little bit of Klingon in there, too.
Klingon. If I was a rich dwarf...
Hey, Mishugana, you're a Mishugana.
You gotta eat the kafilka fish, though.
Oh, come on. Anyway, thank you for the voicemail. Okay, this next one, this is actually an email, which you can rfistaff@gmail.com would be the email. Hey, RFI, I greatly enjoy AD&D, but I would like to broaden my horizons on other RPGs. I'm aware that this is a first edition podcast, but that's not stopped you from talking about other systems on occasion.
True.
I've heard a lot about Gamma World, and I was wondering if you can point me in the right direction of which edition. I was thinking first or second, as those seem to be the ones most compatible with AD&D. Thanks, DM Joe. No, not that DM Joe.
Spot on. First or second edition Gamma World, which is most compatible with AD&D. In my opinion, the best of all the editions of Gamma World. And if you're lucky, you can look out there on eBay and some other places. You could find a lot of information. In fact, I'm pretty sure somewhere in my on my links, there's several websites that support the old editions of Gamma World.
Well, finding that box set is going to be a pain.
Yeah.
Yes, that is true.
Yeah. But I managed to pick up a copy of the board game Gamma Marauders that was put out by TSR back then. I haven't had a chance to play it, but it's like the combat of Gamma World in a board game.
But I think if you hunt hard enough, check your local conventions.
Yeah.
Just check online. You could find those first or second edition. I think of the two, I think the second editions of the rules is probably going to be more easily found.
Yeah.
So
I would suggest trolling Amazon through their marketplace, because sometimes you'll find these at like Goodwills or other thrift stores that post their stuff through Amazon, and you could find some decent deals.
Very good point. So an example, Goodwill and I think like San Diego or someone a few years ago posted they had the first Grimtooth's Traps book.
Yeah.
And I bought it for like $10.
Yeah. I just bought the Rollade's Elves book today for 92 cents plus shipping.
Wow. Sweet.
Yeah. You just have to troll the Amazon marketplace, because you'll find random stuff like that. Just realize you'll be paying $4 shipping per book, but when you find one like the Elves book for 92 cents, I'll pay $4 shipping.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's worth it.
Cool. Anything else?
No, that's it this week. The other email was an email to DM Will asking him about a convention and wanted to get together with Will and just to say hi. And I assume we'll contact him whenever he has a chance.
That is correct. I'll do that after the show, after the
Will's
podcast.
Will's fan base is growing.
Yes, the Bismarcky fan base is growing. Yep.
Y'all are killing me.
So, anyone have any more comments?
Well, just to let you all know, I just wanted to pass that, yes, I will be at GameStorm this weekend. I will be there Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I am doing nothing but board game events, and I'm running some of the more recent board games, like, I'm trying to think what came out. It's hard for me to think right now. I'm running so many board. I'm trying to think Alien Frontiers. I'm just thinking of a couple games, Dominant Species and all those. So I'll be doing that. And then the following week, I will be attending the Emerald City Comic Con. And we have been invited there. This is our first year being invited there. And we'll be running board game events on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Okay.
And I will get you an autographed picture of Will Wheaton for you, Vince.
Oh, I don't want an autographed picture of Will Wheaton.
Wheaton!
What a stupid show that he has coming out.
Oh, did you get that link? I thought you would like it.
Oh, I heard about that. Yeah. Somehow, I don't think he'll be running anything first edition. I don't know why.
I don't think he knows how to play first edition, honestly.
He's a poser.
Yeah, he's a poser. Anyway, let's head over into our first segment of the night. And this whole show is kind of a request from the past, as someone wanted to hear about drows or dark elves. So let's head into our first segment.
Yeah, I remember back in the day, a fella knew how to judge a fireball on the fly and how far the cleric could push the undead he turned. I tell ya, with all these min-maxers and munchkins, metagame, and power game, there's something missing that I'm here to learn you. Now sit down and crack your book while I commence to teach you some
table manners.
All right, everyone. Good evening. This is Will, and today's table manners, we are going to talk about the Dark Elves. Now, before I start this, let's talk about a couple words. You can pronounce drow elves as drow. So if you want to say drow, that is correct. If you want to say drow, that is correct. Neither way is incorrect. I just wanted to make sure everyone verified that because I know there's so many arguments on the proper pronunciation of the dark elves, you know, name drow or drow. And for the all intents and purposes, now if anyone has anything else to say, just let me know. I don't know how y'all pronounce it. How do you pronounce it, Vince?
I'm drow. I've always gone with the way I've heard Gary ever say it, drow.
Yeah, me too.
Same
drow.
Here.
It's just one of those funny little geek fights that you hear at a convention.
Right. Yeah.
It's drow. No, it's drow. It's drow. No, it's drow.
Right. Okay. If you went by like standard European pronunciations, it would be drow because the O sound in every other language except American English is O.
Oh, it's drow. Oh,
yes,
God.
Exactly.
Well, guess what? Since all of y'all say drow, I'm going to say drow. No, I'm just joking. They're drow elves to me. I always said drow, and I will never change it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I did some research on this, and you know, actually there's a phenomenal amount of information on the creation of drow elves. And I believe if I read correctly, and as I was researching everything, this, again, is a creation of Gary Gygax that didn't come from anywhere. Even though the word drow is actually comes from some other countries. And I want to say it was Scotland, Norway, or something like that. I couldn't remember how to pronounce it. So it was like a weird word. Trow, or something that familiar. Anyway, Gary, I guess, took this word and he created the drow elves. And this is one of his greatest contributions to first edition AD&D. Now, for those interested, drow elves, and they weren't called drow until the Fiend Folio.
Right.
I believe they were mentioned in the Monster Manual as dark elves or dark-skinned elves, if I'm correct.
Black elves, I think it was.
Oh, were they called black? It was something like that in the Monster Manual 1. Upon the release of the Fiend Folio, they were called drow. And then I got to take a look at dates and everything because I want to know if the G123, one of the more famous modules that have ever been written against the giants, because I know, I believe that's where the first appearance of the drow elves actually took place.
That's correct. It was in the giant series. It was, if I remember correctly, it was in module G3.
Yeah,
where the fire giants, and you actually get to see the drow elves, and I'm trying to remember if they're referred to as drow. I think they might be just referred to as dark elves.
There is a scroll in that promises powerful help from the drow.
No, they are called drow in the module.
Yeah.
Okay, so then the Fiend Folio must... Well, that's weird. I don't know when the Fiend Folio was released, but so you see where it's all coming in now into play on when this stuff was released. So that's interesting to know that they were called drow in G3. I say G123. I talk about all three of them as one. But yeah, so in G3, they are called drow. That's interesting. So that's good. Good. I appreciate that.
Oh, you're so very welcome.
And of course, you know, you'll see them in D1 and 2 and D3, which is Descent into the Depths of the Earth and the Vault of the Drow. And then you'll see them again, I believe, in Q1, Queen of the Demon Web Pits. And honestly, I cannot remember for the life of me right now if Drow were in any more modules for first edition. To be honest with you, I just can't recall right now at this time. Do y'all recall any?
The only thing is the role-aid supplement for elves, number 7.
Right.
Which Matt was just talking about a few moments ago.
Yeah.
But they don't refer to them as drow. They just refer to them as dark elves or black-skinned elves or the darkest elves.
Right, yeah. Right.
I don't recall any other modules published either.
Don't recall right now for the life of me. For some strange reason, excuse me, I was thinking about the Area of the Slave Lords, the A-series. And for some reason, I thought there was a dark elf or a drow elf on the back of one of those modules because I'm thinking of a drow elf, but I just can't recall if that was the case or not, so I might be incorrect.
I thought one of the Slave Lords was a drow. Is that correct? I could have sworn in one of the Slave Lords was a drow.
What? There it goes. So I believe that's another one. So I guess my memory is not as bad as I thought it was.
See, you're not slipping. You're good.
But I'm going to verify to make sure that if it is, then we're good to go. So there are other modules out there in first edition where they do talk about drow elves. Now, like I said, this is one of Gary's greatest contribution. I'm a big fan of drow. I think they make phenomenal enemies. Okay. And I'm telling you, these are enemies that you definitely do not want to run into a dark alley, because these bad boys are just they're insanely powerful with their innate abilities and so on. So, again, we'll talk about that as that comes. So I know that I'm trying to think. I know that there were some novels which were The Artifact of Evil, which I think Gary Gygax had for the Greyhawk Adventures. And I believe that was also the first novel to feature the drow predominantly.
Yeah, probably. And they also, the novelization of Against the Giants, too, of course.
Oh, yeah, that too. And I've noticed that they covered the drow's involvement also in the Sea of Death, Come Endless Darkness, and Dance of Demons, which all came out in the late 1980s, 87, 88, 89, somewhere in that time period.
I'm sure you're probably going to mention certain particular drow.
Well, let me see here. I had no intent of mentioning any particular drow whatsoever.
Yeah. I just pulled out
you
my...
You know what, though? I have to say, in Salvatore's defense, those books were written during the time of first edition for Forgotten Realms with Drizzt.
The Icewind Dale? No, not Icewind
Dale. Icewind Dale trilogy, yes.
What?
Yeah, they were. I think the first one was in 88.
Oh, yeah, that'd still be first edition.
Yeah, yeah, the Icewind Dale trilogy was 88 to 90.
Right. So technically, Drizzt is a first edition AD&D drow elf, technically.
Yeah, and I just pulled out my copy of A1 through A4, and there is a drow in it.
There you go. I am so I'm awesome.
Yeah, it's one of the slave lords. It's Edralve, or Edralve, is a 5th level fighter cleric drow.
There you go.
Now, the whole thing with Drizzt, and you got to keep in mind, remember, Unearthed Arcana, when that was released in 85, they put the drow elves as one of the player character races. That predates the novels. So you can't blame Salvatore for making up Drizzt. He was just kind of going along with what was already in, it was already within the published materials of D&D or AD&D.
Right.
But this is where my problem comes in. Everybody wants to play like Drizzt.
Right.
And you know, I want to have 2 scimitars. Okay, dude, you're going to be original? Can you be original for once? How about 1 scimitar? No, I want 2, and I want a pet panther too. And I said, okay, here we go. I know where this is going to end.
And then I want claws that pop out of my wrists and a regeneration power and can be short and Canadian.
That's Wolverine.
That's Wolverine, yeah.
Yes, but that's every superhero RPG you play in. You have people wanting to be a Wolverine or a Batman. Salvatore created an archetype people really latched on to.
Exactly. And that's the key word right there. An archetype, or you said archetype. I call it an archetype. That's exactly what it was to me. So there are drow elves and other first edition modules, and that's good, because I knew I remembered that there were other modules. I know there's some others, but I just can't recall the time being, so that's interesting. Now, you did mention the Unearthed Arcana. That is correct. I think that's the first place where you can actually play drow elves as a PC, which is pretty good and everything, because they still had all their innate abilities, depending on your male or female, because they had different innate abilities.
Right.
So that's a good thing that you mentioned. And then, of course, you know, the drow as a non-NPC or as a monster, as I would call it, in the Fiend Folio. And that's just interesting, because I know that they're all evil. They're all chaotic evil until the Unearthed Arcana came out, because I believe they can be what? Good? Can they be good?
Yes.
Yeah, I believe they can be good. They can't be lawful good, right? They have to be chaotic good. Is it any chaotic? If someone had the Unearthed Arcana next to them, they could check that up on there and see what the deal is on that. But I don't think they can be lawful good, anything like that. But no, dark elves, drow, however you want to call it, Great creation, awesome creation, great foes. I mean, they are typically just, I mean, just awesome foes. I really enjoy playing them. I use every aspect I can when I use them in a campaign, especially like Driders and when they're dealing with Loth, the Spider Queen, and so on. Just that whole pantheon of, you know, the Dark Elves, the Drow, or whatever, and their deities is just, it's just awesome. And it can make for an endless campaign just on that alone if someone wants to do that. Now, yes, we did cover some other products. You know, since you did bring up Drizzt.
Yeah, well,
don't know why.
But you can't talk about the Drow unless you're talking about Drizzt. It's kind of a given.
Before we go to Drizzt, I looked it up. It's in the Unearthed Arcana. It says, Drow are generally evil and chaotic in nature, though a player characters are not required to be so.
So okay. You could have a lawful good Drow.
Wow, is that not an anomaly? Oh, boy, I tell you. I'm a lawful good Drow elf.
Well, pretty much every player character that plays a Drow is an anomaly, so...
Yeah, so, yeah.
Yeah, that is true and everything. And so, and like I said, you know, hey, whatever's fun, I will not take any fun away from anyone. If they want to play Drow Elves and play them like Drizzt, good luck and everything. I'm going to play a dwarf like Bruno or something. No. But there's other products out there that, you know, I will not shy away from that you can easily use for first edition. And I'm telling you, if you don't have them, get them. One is Menzel Berenzin. Get that box set.
Absolutely. I totally missed the boat on that one.
Oh, yeah, I'm kicking myself because Half Price Books had a copy for $15.
Wow, you should have got that.
The only reason I didn't is I wasn't sure exactly how many maps it was supposed to have at the time. And when I opened it up, I counted, and there was a lot in there. And I'm like, if it's missing a map, that's going to drive me nuts.
Yeah.
So it's like, do I buy the money and then have an incomplete set? Or, you know, so I passed, and needless to say, I'm kicking myself.
Right. Well, I tell you, get Menzel Berenzin. I mean, it is a excellent, excellent source of information just on where they live at. And you can put that in a first edition game and really make it awesome. Right. And now, there's another supplement for that type of campaign set. If you're going into the Underdark, which that's where Drow live at, they live in the Underdark, is to get the, what is it called again?
Underdark Mountain?
No. The Underdark?
Underdarkness? What was that? Oh, well, you know.
I got the book right here, The Drow, The Underdark.
No, it's a box set.
Undermountain?
No, it's not Undermountain. There's another Underdarkness setting, and I can't just remember the box set for the life of me. It just slipped my tongue. Oh, man. But I'll get it later on. I'll figure it out as we're talking in the show and everything. I'll go down and run down the real quick.
A Night Below?
There you go. That's the one, my friend. That's it. Thank you. Thank you. A Night Below. That's another supplemental source to just make the Underdark just a phenomenal place to do some campaigning. That is some serious adventuring right there. Because when characters go down there, it's not like they're going to be down there 1 day, 2 day, 3 day. They may be down there 4 or 5 months, 6 months, because that's going down deep into the recesses of the earth. So, or whatever, you know, Greyhawk, Forgotten Realms, whatever campaign system you want to use. Which comes to the next point.
Yay.
Drow elves. Okay, thank you for the plot there. Drow elves are found in many systems, not just Greyhawk, but they're found in the Forgotten Realms of the Drizzt. And then you have Eberron, which we won't talk about. That's totally a different campaign setting. Yeah. And some other campaign settings out there. So there are Drow and other campaign settings.
Right. I got the one book I just mentioned, the Forgotten Realms book for second edition, The Drow, The Underdark. Right. I have that book. It's actually a really good supplement. And it gives a whole thing on Drow society, at least in the Forgotten Realms. There's some good bits of information you can port over anybody if you're not using Forgotten Realms.
Oh, yes, definitely. I absolutely approve of that because that book alone, I mean, will give so much more information. I'm talking about the deities, ways of life, and all that stuff. And that's very important, especially for a player character who wants to run a good Drow elf, which, of course, like I said, it's an anomaly.
Yeah, it gives
it gives
a good overview. If you want to just do like a whole Drow campaign that you're in the Underdark, you could do that.
And you definitely need... Roll 8711 elves like Matt.
Yes.
Matt, did you get your copy yet?
No, I just ordered it today.
Oh my god, there's such good facts in here. Like takes you to the other. It goes in depth about Society of Dark Elves.
Yes. It's
where that dark elves were once normal elves that fell from grace for committing sins. How do you pronounce that? They're Nanatuden, as in their own tongue, is what means dark elf.
Yes.
And you know what's creepy? The whole thing about dark elf women are directed to become pregnant as soon as they're able to and have two children.
Yes.
By their father or brother.
Very creepy organization. Very matriarchal. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about. It's run by the females. Right. So don't make fun of the way I talk. I know I'm Bismarcky, but I still talk a certain way. But
it's very much spiderish in their society.
And that's creepy because I don't like spiders. And right. Everything revolves around webs and eight-legged creatures and eight eyes, and it's just creepy. It's just absolutely creepy when you deal with how – I mean, you got to understand that this is a very – I don't know if you want to be a male in this society.
No.
Because I tell – males suffer greatly. And
that's why Drizzt ran away.
Yeah, of course. But, you know, when I saw a great movie, and I know I hate to get off subject just a little bit. I don't know if you ever saw it. It's an older movie. It was called Curse of the Black Widow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I remember that one.
You see a Black Widow spider the size of a cow, you can't help but think about Driders and, you know, Loth and all that stuff because it's just a creepy-looking creature.
You were bringing about, like you're alluding to Drow society.
Yes.
It's kind of like how the Black Widow spider is. The female is the one who rules. It's the females of that society who are in charge. And if you are not a strong enough male, you will be killed or worse. You might become a Drider. I don't know. I'd rather be killed than become a Drider.
I think the ones that become Driders are the ones that fail the test.
Right. Yeah, there's a test they have to do.
Yeah, they're the ones that they show potential, but then when they're tested, they fail.
Right, and then they get cursed with that, and then they get to be servants. But I absolutely agree with Vince. Get that elf supplement, that Rolaid supplement elves, because I'm telling you, that covers the society extremely well, and you're going to see exactly how brutal the society is, because I'm just astonished that they have very short, it appears.
Yeah.
Yeah. Compared to other elves, yeah, absolutely.
But now, understand, they also have not a clannish relationship, unlike dwarves, but they have houses, which real similar to Klingons on Star Trek. And the houses fight among themselves. It's amazing.
Right. I also, when I remember reading Drow the Underdark and some of the other stuff, it also reminded me a bit about like Dune and the Lansrod, about the different houses of the Lansrod in the Dune series of books. Yes. How like the Emperor always kept the houses of the Lansrod occupied by having them like war against each other. It's the same thing in Drow society.
Well, Loth promotes that. Well, understand also, the big key thing we have to remember is they're chaotic evil. So they're not going to be organized in the sense that we think of organization as lawful creatures are organized. Right. But she promotes that kind of, what would you use the word? That kind of antagonistic relationship
because she wants the strongest
to survive and the weak to either serve or perish.
Very Darwinian in its approach.
Exactly. So with all that said, you know, hey, the floor is open, but I think I can cover as much on Drow as possible. We can continue on, but Drow, great subject. One of, you know, Gary's greatest creations that I give him credit that he did create a phenomenal foe that, I mean, will definitely test a party's mettle. I mean, those innate abilities are just absolutely devastating. If you run into a party of these, you're going to have some issues. I don't care what anyone says.
Yeah.
You're going to have issues. Casting Darkness alone, I mean, that innate ability, that's just amazing. They just have amazing abilities. I give kudos to Gary. Great creation, great foes, and use them if you can.
Yeah, you know what? I kind of open it up to, I guess, the rest of us here. I got a question. It's one of those things that has been talked about in the past, especially in the advent of the interwebs. Interwebs. Kind of going with the Drow things. Yes. There has been somewhat of a controversy, I guess, for some people. There are some DMs, some players who disapprove of the Drow being used as player characters. What's your take on it, guys? Personally, I really don't care. I think if it adds to a campaign, I think it's okay. And I think it makes a really challenging role-playing opportunity. So, I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, I'll start off since nobody said anything.
Okay. Well, you to speak sometimes. You have a right to speak. You're the host. Speak.
Yeah. Speak. What? He's not a dog, man.
Well, converse then.
But if he fails his test, he'll be a drider.
Yeah. So would you rather hear about the printer cartridge story or the drow?
The drow.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. No, I don't have a problem with drawing the campaign. I wouldn't want a full group of them, though. I'd like to have a person in the cloak in the group that's kind of hiding and skulking around, helping them out and stuff. No, I wouldn't want a full group, no.
Sort of like no more than three rangers in a party.
Well, that's like having a whole party of paladins. Yeah, I agree with Vince. I wouldn't want a whole party of drow. I think it's good to mix it up, and it's good for one person to play something different. Give him some uniqueness there. Give him a reason to be there. But, Lord, let him also be the serious of all the conflicts, too. You have a what in your party? Oh, no, you're in trouble, dude.
Uh-oh, you did not.
No, you did. Now, I kind of go like this. If you're going to have a regular standard campaign, one player as a drow, I think, is cool. If not, I think you go all in, everybody play drow. If you're like going in like a whole drow Underdark campaign, you can have a whole party of drow. I just don't think like half the party drow, half the party not. I would kind of think of it by like, to bring something from my past where I went to this, they had a seer school. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but half the school was Navy SEALs and Force Marine Recon guys, and the other half were like regular air crew folks. And as soon as they got captured, the dude, the POW training, within a few hours, they liberated themselves and blew all the training. The analogy being, I would think the drow would like take over the whole party and like kill them or something like that. So
that happened. And when used to go to MEPICON, there used to be a game there called the Drow Campaign. It never got past scene one because everybody was a drow in the party, and the DM would just be like, this person's starting to talk bad about you, and you'd kind of do one of those things, and the whole party wound up killing itself.
It turns into a game of paranoia and no regenerations.
Right. And the venture is that the venture hook with having a drow PC is trying to keep him alive while they're traveling on top of the surface. Because let's just be realistic, drow elves do not typically travel on the surface. That's why they're called elves. Not because of their skin color, because they're down in the Underdark. I mean, yeah, I guess skin tone might have an issue with it, but I look at it like this. Dark elves, Vince, you brought that up again. Because they fell from grace, they descended into the darkness. Well, they don't have to be dark, I don't think. The fact is they descended into darkness, and they just, they're down in the dark all the time. Right. And they, and that's the whole point. Yeah. Great. I mean, this is just a great option to really make a game live, and a lot of role playing, aspects come out with a drow player.
One of the things I just thought of when you talk about the drow is all those really cool items that they have. The innate magical abilities. Yeah. Oh, I loved when
Nick.
Yes.
We'll talk about those later.
Okay. We are?
Yeah, we'll talk about the weapons and stuff later.
Oh, okay.
Oh, see, I wasn't going to talk about no weapons or nothing like that, but I was just going to tell you about, the magical radiation. Or not. Is that what you're talking about, Vince?
No.
You know that in the Drow series, or I'm not the Drow series, but the Giant series, or the D123 series and so on like that, you'll find out that the weapons that are possessed by drow are magical due to some type of radiation that's underneath there.
Yeah, that they have precious metals that they found in the Underdark.
Right, and then when you bring them into sunlight, they're only good for about 48 hours, 72 hours, and then they lose all their
magic. Yeah, that's what I was going to talk about, yeah.
Oh, okay, whoops, I'm sorry, I apologize. People, you did not hear anything. Stop it. Don't listen. Close your ears. Okay,
let's do the next segment that you're going to be hosting now.
No. Okay, I keep my mouth shut now. But no, Drow Elves, great. I think they're awesome. Great foes. Oh, and you know what? They're allies. Can't fail to mention their allies. They have some great allies, too. They have great, I'm not going to say great relationships with them, but they do have some partnerships with Mind Flayers. I know you're all not fans of Mind Flayers and Psionics, but I think that's awesome, too.
And Spiders.
Oh, yes, yeah, Spiders. What do you call, not Ropers, but what are those things again? The Yugoloth?
Yeah,
I think so. Yeah, yeah, they're like demons.
Handmaidens Aloth, those kind of creatures. Handmaidens Aloth,
yeah.
Yep, those two as well. And understand that Loth is a... She's a demigod. She's a demon. Is she a demon? She's a demigod or is she a demon in this?
She's a demon, but remember, like we said in the past, the demons and devils, the major ones, all have the powers of lesser gods.
Okay, I knew that. I think she was a demigod or a lesser god in Q1, Queen of the Demon Web Pets. She only had like 66 hit points, but right. I think she had like a -6 or a -10 armor class. It's hard to hit her.
10 AC, yeah.
So she was real low, but she could be killed by the party. I wouldn't say it was her. I think it was more like an aspect or something that looks like her so she could test people. But she's nasty. Horrible, horrible individual.
Yeah, they don't actually attribute the Dark Elves to Loth and the Rollies. They use Morda as the goddess.
Oh, yeah. Morda. Hmm. Yeah. You got to like her spaceship, though. You know?
Oh, come on.
Huh?
Her spaceship?
You don't know about that, do you?
No.
In Q1, Queen of the Demon Web Pits, she lives, I don't know. To me, it looks like a spaceship, but she lives in a vessel that is shaped like a spider.
Lives in a giant mechanical spider that crawls around one of the layers of the abyss.
There's a guy in a wheelchair in there controlling it from Wild Wild West.
Oh, God.
No. But that's what I have on Drow. Great subject. If you have any questions, you always know how to contact us.
That's right. RFIstaff@gmail.com.
What the heck is that?
Stand aside, you fool! I have a spell that will work here!
What do you mean I can't hit with that? Oh, right, fine. Show it to me in the book.
Welcome to Game Mechanics.
Hey, everybody, and this is DM Nick, and in Game Mechanics this week, kind of expanding upon talking about the Dark Elves, the Drow, we'll take it one step further and talk about, you know, maybe a way to run an Underdark campaign. So some of the things that, you know, materials you might need, some ideas to run a campaign, some, you know, seeds for some quests and adventures and some ideas. If you want to do some... additional world ideas. So, okay. Anyway, let's take a look at, besides the standard rule books, some additional ones I think that might be handy if you want to run some sort of Underdark campaign would be, surprisingly enough, the Dungeoneer Survival Guide.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I think is a really good source for doing anything with the Underdark, anything underground. Particularly, I was looking through is pages 36 to 62, all about the underground environment, about cave-ins, air supplies, waterways, everything about living in an underground environment. Also, the DM section, pages 62 to 113, particularly the part about what they call the Lands of Deep Earth. And we talked about that in a previous show about the Lands of Deep Earth, about the various different races that live there. I think it's really good inspiration for any DM worth his metal to take a look at. So despite what anybody else believes, yes, there is some usefulness to the Dungeoneer Survival Guide. Okay. And if you don't have it, it's easily found out there
for $5.
So, yeah. For like $5 or something, like $7, whatever it may be. So, some other bits of material, and we talked, and Will talked about earlier, was the book Drow the Underdark, Menzo Barazon, the box set that came out for second edition, also the various novels. So lots of good ideas on Drow society. Also see the original Drow series of modules, not only about the Drow, but about the Kuotoa. There's some really good inspiration there about their society. Yeah. Yeah, there's some really good stuff in there as well, because not only was it the Drow that was introduced in that, the Kuotoa as well, because I'm not sure about this. I could have sworn I read somewhere when they had that whole deal with the deities and demigods, when they had the inclusion of the Cthulhu mythos and then they had to pull it out at the next printing because they didn't get permission from Chaosium.
Right.
Gary and some of the other folks wanted something similar to the Deep Ones, so he made the Kuotoa. I don't know if that might be rumor. I don't know if that's true or not. But the Kuotoa are a lot like the Deep Ones, if you want to find a kind of a something similar to them. So
I think they're awesome. The only thing I have an issue with is that deity they worship, that Bladul Poop.
Whatever her name is. nice looking body, head of a lobster. Go figure. Yeah.
That is
never. so there's
she
some.
Won't give you, she won't give you crabs. She'll give you lobster.
Man, that is so wrong.
Hey, it's Bladoo Pulp. I could talk about her.
Yeah, correct. Well. So by keeping it in mind, we just talked about the Drow in the previous segment, but you have all these other races that are their primary area where they live is the Underdark, the Netherdeep, wherever you want to call it. You got not only the Drow, but you have the Deep Gnomes, the Nerfneblin, as they're called. I just call them Deep Gnomes because Nerfneblin just sounds weird. It's hard to pronounce. Nerfneblin. Sounds like you're talking in reverse. Nerfneblin. And so you have the Deep Gnomes, you have the Kuotoa, you have the Mind Flayers, who are awesome in their right. In fact, we talked about, I think, in a previous show, we did talk about Mind Flayers, and there's a really good Dragon magazine article, The Ecology of the Ithalid, The Ecology of the Mind Flayer. It's really good inspiration about Mind Flayer society in there. Some other ones, the Duggar, which are like the evil dwarves, which are like the Dark Elves. So they have the Duggar. So there's a few others that I could think of. The Ableth.
Oh, yes. And you know what? I'm glad you brought that up because real soon there is going to – and Vince, I really got to talk to you about this one. There is a certain company that is going to be releasing an Ableth miniature.
Ooh.
You have to see this thing. It's freaking awesome. I'm going to get four of these.
Yeah, okay. Those Ableth, they're very similar to like the Mind Flayers, as they tend to control others. Also, another big contender in the Underdark would be Beholders because of their magical powers. And if you use some other sources, materials beyond first edition, you can use some of the stuff from second edition and kind of port it in there, you know, like the Lensmen and some of the other minor types of Beholder kin. Those are really cool to use. So
The Darrow.
There you go. The Darrow is another good one. Zorn.
Zorn. Don't forget them.
Inner Earth. Yep.
Yeah.
So you have, but I think a lot of the major players, you got Duggar, you got the Deep Gnomes, Kuotoa, Drow, Mind Flayers. Those are some of your more heavy hitters in the Underdark. And trying to create a campaign wall that can be quite daunting, but I have worked on it a little bit over the years, and some quest ideas I think that might want to work with when you do like a whole campaign is there's a local town and there's kidnappings that are happening late at night. Who's doing the kidnappings? Who are these people that are being kidnapped and why? Could it be Drow? Could it be Kuotoa that's doing it? Depending on where their location is, could be Drow. If they're closer to like a waterway or something, could be Kuotoa. Who knows? Maybe you could have a campaign idea, a quest idea for like a, maybe there's a, an actual invasion that's happening from the Underdark. Maybe the Drow have finally decided, you know what? We're done being kicked around, so we're going to finally attack everybody. Maybe you have to, you're hired by the kingdom and try to stop the this invasion of Drow or whoever it may be. Another one I thought would be pretty cool would be maybe you're hired by dwarves or gnomes and they're looking for new sources of wealth and you're kind of like an advanced team for the for a dwarven clan or a gnomish clan. And you're set out to find new sources of wealth, either gems or gold, mithril, whatever it may be. So just a few other like, you know, campaign ideas to get your players involved in, you know, trying to get into the Netherdeep. Now, to expand on that even more, I could give everybody kind of an example of an Underdark campaign. And one of the things I was working on for several years right now with my friend Jeff was a campaign called the Twilight Grotto in Nether Deep City. And we made a whole city under the earth. We called it Nether Deep City. And it's in an area called the Twilight Grotto. And the major players of this particular city are, you have the Drow, of course. You have the Beholders. You also have what we call, and we kind of took that from second edition, a Deep Dragon and her special minions that were created called the Deep Kobolds. So there's special type of kobolds, and these little guys are nasty. we also have Mind Flayers, the Deep Gnomes, and there's different areas of the city there. They're sort of think of like New York City, and there's like the five different boroughs. Mm-hmm. Same thing with Nether Deep City. There's a place called the Hive where the Beholders, and there's the Upper Hive where the Beholders and their Beholder kin are. Then you have the Lower Hive, which is controlled by the Deep Dragon and her Deep Kobold minions. Then you have a place called the Thrall, which is just a huge population of different mixes of races. You have half elves, you got half drow, humans, thug halflings, driders, all different types of things running around there. You have a place called Darkwater, which is controlled by the Duergar, which are those evil dwarves. And the what?
Any pirates roaming around the water?
No. But an interesting thing, though, is one of the alliances that have kind of come up in this city. So you got the Duergar, who are kind of aligned with the Kuotoa out of necessity, because they're both in the same area. You also have an area called Flicker Flame, which is the primary hold of the Deep Gnomes. The Deep Gnomes, you would think being a kind of a goodly race of creatures, would be totally dominated by the other races, like the Mind Flayers and the Drow and what have you. Not so. The Deep Gnomes in Netherdeep City have one crucial ability. They control the natural gas that goes into the city, which is used for lighting, which is used for cooking, which is used for... They're kind of like the guys who control the natural gas works of the city, because they are so knowledgeable about this blue flame. Hence the name of their burrow called Flicker Flame. So we have a Flicker Flame, then there's a Shimmer Fog, which is the domination of the Mind Flayers, and you also have the Drow over there and one place called the Press. And the Press is just primarily a human population. And they're kind of almost like the slaves. So some of the alliances in this city, like I said, you have the Beholders and Mind Flayers on one side. Because the Beholders align with the Mind Flayers for one. One is really good with psionics. The other one's really good with magic. But both races, they don't reproduce that much. They have generally a lower birth rate compared to the other ones. So it was kind of a mutual benefit kind of thing.
Well, I'm telling you right now, if I was a mind flayer, I would be eating some beholders because they got big brains.
Yeah, but it's hard to get their death rays and such like that. So I have a really cool backstory on how the beholders and the mind flayers became allies, but I'll hold that off for later. For hopefully, if this ever sees publication, let's say that.
Hint, hint.
Yes, hopefully. So,
but so now that you talk about those kind of things, when you talk about the underground denizens of such things, I'm asking every one of y'all that thing. Do y'all take into consideration the other flora and fauna that might be down there, such as slimes, oozes, moles, yeah. Shriekers, piercers,
right,
and all that stuff.
Now, there, I know, and that's, I think that kind of brings in the other thing. It's like, how are you, what sort of campaign are you going to have a campaign where it's a bunch of above worlders going into this area, kind of like the original Giants and Drow series is? Or are you going to go with it where they are denizens of the under-earth, of the Underdark? And you're going to create a campaign all around that, that you have right. Someone that's going to be playing a drow, another one that's playing a deep gnome, or, you know, something like that. So there's a couple ways you could, I guess you could do that. And you have to take those things like the environment into consideration. Like,
right. Well, I can tell you this, though, with some things that I have seen and read over the years, and you know, I read so many campaigns that people put out, that, I mean, don't get me wrong now, the drow have magnificent cities underneath the ground, uh-huh. And a lot of surface dwellers go down there to get certain things. Now, yes, a good portion of them might be evil, but it's possible for a party of neutral to good characters to go down there to these cities, you know, doing a scout advance, you know, map it out and everything, yep. Figure all the crazy stuff out. And, you know, I mean, it's just one of those options. Like I said, the imagination has to be used in these cases and just, you know, deal with it as it comes.
We took this idea, my friend Jeff and I, we got the inspiration from like a little bit on Menzo Berenzaim and also the original Vault of the Drow series, and we took it to the next level because the population of Netherdeep City is roughly a real-world equivalent to the size of Ontario, California. Oh. So you're talking like a roughly 160,000 inhabitants, give or take a few thousand.
Ontario where?
Ontario, California.
Oh, they couldn't make up their own original name. They took something from Canada. Unbelievable.
I just looked it up because I remember it's like, oh my gosh, the population of the city is like huge. And so I looked up like, oh, okay, what would be a real world equivalent? Ontario, California is roughly like 163,000 people. Yeah, it could be more because depending if it's the trade season, you can have up to anywhere like to 400,000 in different types of inhabitants going through. And I'm just talking about the basic ones here. You also have intelligent undead that might be just roaming around here. Would not be uncommon to walking down the streets of Netherdeep City and you could see a vampire having a conversation with, you know, with a type 5 demon, you know, something like that. It's, and you can, you know, rub shoulders with mind flayers and you could see a group of beholders coming down the street, maybe go on to where the drow living, you see them, the drow riding along their giant with their giant lizard mounts. So this city has would blow everybody's minds when they see some of this stuff. And yeah, it's probably not for really low level characters. So but yeah, we've been working on this for some time. There's some other stuff like a little nugget of information. The Duggar, the evil dwarves. One of the other reasons why they made the alliance with the Kuo-Toa is because the Mind Flayers particularly like Duggar brains. They're very tasty. Reason being, Duggars tend to like a particular drug. It's kind of like a psychedelic drug to them. And it's altered their brains so much that when Mind Flayers eat their brains, they tend to have the same effect. So,
oh, see, now that even makes a great thing now, because now you have the Duergar. They're enemies of the Myconoids or the Myconids.
Right. That's exactly what I was thinking.
There you go. See, another little twist.
There you go. And then the Myconids get involved where you help them out. And again, just to let you all know, they make a great entrance in the Slave Lord series, the Myconids, the mushroom people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know what?
Yep.
I need to include those as well, because they would be a really good ally for the Deep Gnomes as well. I think that they would naturally gravitate towards each other.
Right, because the Myconids kind of want to be left alone. They just do their own thing. They have their own little... As long as you're not harming the fungus around them, they'll leave you alone.
Yeah. Other than that, they'll mess with you.
Yeah.
Your brain. That's some other things about this city that we've created and the environs. There's this one thing, the maintenance crews, particularly with the sewers in Nether Deep City. And we just thought, would be a really cool race to use that would want to hang out in the sewers in a place like this. So I thought, okay, troglodytes. So the troglodytes in Nether Deep City are the ones that are in charge of maintaining the sewers, particularly a guy named Jorgagu Swampblood. He's the head of the Trog clan, the Swampbloods. And he just set himself up as king of the sewers one day. And the council of Nether Deep City said, who the heck is this interloper going into our sewers? And everybody thought, wait a minute, if he's willing to hang out there, well, he could do some work for us. So he and his clan, they do the maintenance on all the sewers. But, sometimes it's a little bit of a problem, trying to get them to do things, because troglodytes are a little bit slow. They're not exactly smart. Sometimes, they'll start a project. They'll be arguing amongst themselves. They'll attack each other. One or two of the trogs might get eaten, and they'll eventually finish the job. So,
you forgot they stink.
And they stink, too. That's why they hang out there. So that was one of the things that we kind of threw in there. So it's a nice little tidbit there on the sewers in Nether Deep City. And there's some other stuff, too, like in this particular area. For clerics and magic users, or trying to find... tomes and things of that nature. You could probably find a lot of them in this particular city. You could find different special herbs for healing. Thieves and assassins will have no problem finding various lethal poisons here. And if you're a fighter, you're in luck. You could find exotic weapons and armor. You've really come to the right place in this place. So... there's quite a few libraries for magic users, but generally the libraries, they will not allow you to take the books off premises. You have to write them down there. But, they might have various spells that, might be a variant of a magic missile and it'll blind the target when it hits or something like that. So, really cool stuff that you could find for every sort of player. Find something interesting in the city, and hopefully someday, whenever that may be, might get this published. Who knows? So it's been sitting around for a few years. We've been kind of working on it here and there. So hopefully this will get some ideas, some inspirations of what you could do, with an Underdark type of campaign setting. And I'm going to think about when you're doing something like this, where are some of the sources of food and water? What about light if you need it? One of the things, interesting things we did for the Twilight Grotto is naturally illuminated by this unusual fungus, and it's in perpetual twilight. The whole place is in perpetual twilight. So that's why it's such a popular place. For all the different denizens of the Underdark that come there. And I use those interchangeably, Underdark, Netherdeep, whatever you want to call it. So anyway, that's kind of my take on the whole shebang. I wonder what you guys think. Think for another Underdark campaign. So
I would have never gone. That's pretty much... You went into some good depth there. That's good. Good job.
Yeah, we have several pages here. I would say we, and that's, I just did the tip of the iceberg there. I have a lot more material that you know, Jeff and I have worked on. And I want to tell all our listeners, this isn't just a, I'm not promoting this.
Yeah. I'm
whatever. Pinocchio.
In all seriousness, I'm not just promoting this as like a product to get or anything like that. I want to take little bits of information, you know, to give some inspiration. If you want to use it, that's cool, because, you know, hopefully if it does get out there and you like it, that's cool. If not, whatever. But hey, you know, I just wanted to share some of this information to everybody. I just think it's a really cool setting that has been tapped in the past, but I don't think in this particular way. So,
well, I tell you one thing that I you did mention something that brought some things, and I think Vince is familiar with Necromancer Games.
Yeah.
They came out with some awesome modules during the OGL days. Mm-hmm. And I mean, these are some fantastic modules if you can find them. And quite a few of them have to deal with the Underdark or that kind of, you know, under the ground adventures. Uh-huh. And when you mention this stuff about like the drow and the other Underdark denizens, and we talk about the oozes, the slimes and jellies.
Right.
And this is where the one demon lord comes in, Jublex, if you're all familiar with him.
Oh, yeah.
And he's not a big fan of Loth as far as I'm concerned. I don't think he's a big fan. I think they're worn among each other.
Yeah.
So again, these are good things to all take in consideration now, because since they are chaotic creatures or chaotic lords. And Jublex, I love him. I think he's awesome. I just like the fact he's the lord of slimes, oozes, and moles.
Yeah.
Now, if you use Greyhawk, but what are their names again? Is it Zugmoys?
Zugmoys. She's the she and what's his name have teamed up.
Ayuz?
So, yeah.
Ayuz or whatever his name is.
I always call them Ayuz.
Okay. But, you know, whatever the case may be, like, all of them have to deal with underdark or, you know, below the ground denizens. And
right.
So all these things may not work with. So, you know, you could use that as an adventure hook or a red herring that you're being used from one force under the guise of a benevolent organization to fight the other one. So just a thought there.
No, that's cool. And that's one of the reasons why I put that out. Some inspiration for some DMs. Because I think sometimes we kind of get stuck in a rut. We do the same thing over and over again. It's like, and we are afraid to try something different. Well, you know what? Here's something different. You know, go all out. Go below the earth completely and you know, really blow your players' minds. You know, really take them out of their comfort zone, more or less. So. Yeah.
Well, if you run into Bloop Bloop or whatever her name is, let me know. Tell her I said hello.
Okay. I just thought the picture was funny. Great looking body, lobster head. Okay.
All right, cool.
So, yeah. So we'll just like, I'll leave it at that. And if we have any other of our listeners out there who'd like to tell us any ideas or for an Underdark campaign, you know, let us know. And hopefully we'll hear from all your folks soon.
That is not dead, which can eternally die. And with strange ears, even death may die.
I welcome the unwary to the Creature Feature Theater.
And now, continuing our Underdark theme, we go to the Creature Feature Theater. And we're talk about a creature we actually mentioned earlier. One of Will's favorites, the Drider.
Yes! Woot, woot!
Oh, yes. Yes, the Drider. These are the unworthy elves. The unworthy dark elves who showed potential, got to the 6th or 7th level, and then they were put through Lolth's test and failed horribly. So therefore, they must be punished because, yes, the Drow Society is very Darwinian, and it is survival of the fittest. And since they were unfit, they were turned into part elf, part spider. Yes, they're just quite hideous. And if you go to the Monster Manual 2, page 60, you can see the Drider. Yeah. Yes, fortunately for those that dwell in the
Underdark. I want to step on it.
If only you could step on it, because it is quite large, as in it is a size large. So you're not stepping on it. Unless maybe you're
a large spell.
Yeah. You'll have to cast your enlarged spell on like a giant. Then they might be able to step on it. But squishy. And they attack with their normal weapons, but they also like paralyzing. So they take on some spider characteristics. And then they still retain all the powers that they had prior to being transformed to a Drider. So if they were a 6th level magic user or a 7th level cleric, they still have all those powers as well. The Drider is a 6 hit dice plus 6 creature. And they have a 15% magic resistance and an intelligence high. So these are...
Oh, wow. I just noticed that magic resistance of 15%. Holy mackerel.
Yeah. It just makes them that much scarier because they have quite a bit of hit points. They can paralyze you, which when you're dealing with something this lethal is really, really bad, because I can only imagine what they would do to you once they paralyze you, because it wouldn't be a quick kill. They're going
to
have
They're going to do to you like ropers do to people. They'll eat you very slowly and painfully.
Oh, yes, because once they become a Drider, they develop the taste for blood. So they have, much like a spider. So, yeah, they'll probably just tie you up and then start sucking the blood from you. Yes. And then they are just horribly bloated spiders. So they're not even like... just a spider. They're just these large, disgusting masses.
Corpulent?
Yes.
That's what I would use the word. Corpulent, bloody, massive, bloated.
Here's something interesting I forgot about. It says, due to their bloated form, it is impossible to distinguish the sex of the Drider, but 60% of them encountered will be female.
Right.
Interesting.
Yes, because it's a very matriarchal society of the Drow, and typically it's the females that will advance further than the males, so that actually makes sense.
Good point. Yeah.
And normally those are the priestesses, because they do have a hierarchy in their church.
Yeah.
And in order for the top person, and it's the same thing that goes with like druids. If you want to be like a 14th or 15th level druid, you have to replace the other person that already has that title. So when they get into this combat or whatever they do to determine this contest and they fail, that's why they become Driders in most cases.
Oh, okay. Right. I see.
Yes. And then they still maintain all the magical abilities of the Drow.
Oh, dancing lights, darkness, all that stuff.
But the females also get clairvoyance, detect, lie, dispel magic, and suggestion once per day.
Oh, lovely.
Yes. So, yeah, they're just really, really nasty creatures. And then if you go to Dragon Magazine 129, page 30, there's entering the Driders. It just goes into more detail about the Driders. Oh. This is where it talks about their natural thirst for blood. A Drider must consume blood at least once every 4 days, or it takes 1 to 6 hit points damage per day.
Wow.
Yeah. And then, so this is why the Drider is always creating new ways of capturing victims.
And it's 10% of the time they're encountered with 2 to 12 huge spiders.
Yes.
Yikes. Right. So not only do you have to deal with them, but they're huge spider pals, baby.
Yes. The only thing that's a saving grace for the party is they tend to be solitary creatures because of the shame and humiliation of being a Drider. So you will only encounter 1 to 4 of them, because they'll really only associate with other Driders. They want nothing to do with the rest of Drow society.
Which is an interesting note onto itself and everything, because it seems as now I've seen, different, conversations concerning this on certain supplemental material on whether or not once you become a Drider, you are driven from the city. They don't want to deal with you and they will kill you on sight. And in this case, it confirms the same thing here in the Monster Manual 2, that they don't want to deal with Drow whatsoever.
Right.
So that's amazing, because I've seen some supplemental sources that say that some Drider are kept back in the city and still used as like guards or attack monsters in an arena or whatever the case may be, in gladiatorial contests and so on. So that's an interesting statement there.
Yeah. And also, as part of the change, since we've established earlier that a Drow can actually be of any alignment, once converted to a Drider, they become chaotic evil no matter what their alignment was. So basically, they go insane and develop a bloodlust as part of the conversion as well.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Gross. Nasty.
So basically, Lolth ends up creating these bloodthirsty, highly intelligent creatures who solely exist to kill, which actually kind of fits her modus operandi. Mm-hmm. But
you know, that was interesting, Will, about the whole like using them in like gladiatorial combat. I could definitely see
that sounded more like a circus to me.
No, that's but yeah, using Driders as like a pit monster in a gladiatorial combat, that I could see that in Drow society. Yeah. It's like, because they're like the lowest of the low,
right?
Why not use them against like some other slaves or something like that?
Exactly, for their enjoyment and like I said, they're chaotic evil, so you know they're extremely cruel.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
traitors and so on else.
Yeah, I could even see some of the other races of the Underdark using them in the same fashion as well. Even though they're highly intelligent, just due to their self-esteem issues, I see them being easily manipulated.
Like the creature next door in the next page, the Duger.
Yes. Exactly.
What a coinkydink.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, interesting that when I look at the Drider and I think about that being in a spider, you know who could be a surprising ally for these bad boys? It's Ettercaps.
Yeah.
Ooh. Actually, yeah, I could see that.
Yep, because Ettercaps, you know, their relationship with spiders are really friendly. So I can see how they all work together. Now, this is just another adventure hook where you know that the Ettercaps trick the characters to go into this place so the spider allies can eat them, and then everyone enjoys the meal all together.
Right. Or I can even see that being spun by the creative party that's cornered by a Drider, perhaps being like, hey, we'll help you get some better blood if we... So at that point, all of a sudden, they're riding the back of the Drider and running prey with it.
Wow.
I don't like that idea too much. That's just creepy. Now, I'm going to tell you what it is. This is what my problem with Driders are. You know, I have spiders out here in my yard, in the garden, everything. And when I see when a fly or a moth flies into that spider web, and that spider goes up there and starts wrapping it around, that silk comes out of its, you know, its abdomen. That's right. Exactly. Like the fly, help me, help me. And the guy throws the rock. It's just terrifying.
Yeah.
That's circle of life.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep, and we can't forget that the Drider can also cast Net of Entanglement as well. So they have their own, and they can do 10 of them per day.
Oh, nice.
So, can you imagine what those dwarves are thinking in The Hobbit when they were being wrapped up by the spiders and the spiders talk?
That's creepy. Yeah, that's pretty much what they experienced was a Drider.
That's terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Yep,
good monsters. I like them. I think they're awesome foes. And in conjunction with other monsters and everything, they can be terrifying. Yep, I love Driders.
Right.
Driders themselves are terrifying.
Yeah. Absolutely.
What was that?
Driders themselves are terrifying.
Yeah, they are. They are absolutely, no doubt, scary.
Right.
I'm having
Yeah, just when you flee from the cities of the Underdark thinking, okay, these cities are just too evil and chaotic. You're like, I'll be safe out in the middle of nowhere in this cave. And then all of a sudden, you see a giant web and a Drider.
With his pals.
Yeah, really? There's no safe place in the Underdark.
No.
Very hospital. I mean, hospital. Inhospitable environment.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, end our last segment.
As the secret portal yields to your efforts, you stand amazed at a vision from the most fevered dreams of avarice. Before you lies the Dragon's Horde.
In the Dragon Horde this week, we're going to talk about the Drow weapons. So using Drow weapons in your campaign. Well, as DM Will alluded to before and gave away one of the little things I was going to talk about.
Sorry!
Drow weapons have a tendency to break or not function after 48 hours in sunlight. So, basically, Drows or Dark Elves prefer the bow, rapier, or slim-throwing dagger weapon, which will also be called a kamchak. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. Now, what a kamchak is a blade with a groove in it that's usually filled with sticky poison made from mushrooms. So these people...
Mushrooms, man. All right.
Another fact about their weapons is most of them were encrusted with jewels and made of precious metal, like Will was saying before, which they found in the Underdark. I don't know what the jewels have to do with it, but I guess they fancy, fancy things.
Why not? Sparklies.
Let's see, their weapons don't work after being above ground for a certain amount of time. Now, there's another weapon I wanted to highlight real quick was the called the Whippet, which is a really bad weapon. It's like a throwing blade attached to a short wooden stick feathered like an arrow. This Whippet is thrown from the stick, and while in the air, the stick explodes into flames and propels it propels the stick at a fantastic speed. So its target has AC reduced by 3 because of this weapon. Plus, the Dark Elf gets a +1 to hit with it. And he gets DA damage on this weapon. But he can only use it once a day. But there's rumors that there was a whole brigade of these Dark Elves walking around with learning this weapon, so...
Wow.
Yes, they were all crafted by the Dark Elf Devo.
Yes.
Way to ruin the segment.
You're welcome.
That is awesome.
Now, one thing I wanted to explain, why would they put jewels on their weapons? Anyone have any reason for that one? Because I didn't see a reason for that.
Well, I guess since they're in a mountain, there could be gems and jewels and that sort of thing. So why not?
Yeah, the possession of material wealth could also elevate their station.
Right, because I can see them being a kind of greedy, selfish, so it kind of makes sense. My sword's shinier than your sword in this.
Yeah.
Yeah, and remember now that when the drow houses and how they form and everything, how they fight among one another, it's usually the ones with the most powerful spellcasters and the wealthiest of the merchants. Remember, they have merchants. They have the whole thing going on there, you know, with their society. Right. So that's probably why they do that. Probably also for intimidation as well.
Yeah.
I can think of that.
With they're also in being underground people. They have the same ability to... build a structure or detect structures underground like dwarves do, so since they're being underground so much.
Oh yeah, definitely. I have no problem. I think they should have all those special abilities, you know, to live down the direction sense and all that stuff. Yeah. And like I said, their cities are magnificent. These cities are not shoddy. Yeah. They're built very well.
Right. I thought one of the things that was actually brilliant when Gary Gygax brought the drow into AD&D, particularly their weapons and equipment, how they fell apart over time.
Yeah.
Because I think everybody's experienced it at least once when they went through that series of modules. We're like, wow, we got these really cool swords and got these cool cloaks. And, you know, they get up above, you know, ground in the next couple of days, like, what happened to my sword? There's nothing left. Yeah.
48 hours, right?
Yeah. Yes, that was
a good way to control that really cool stuff.
Right. Yes, that's a nice way to give the characters some extra little help so they can survive the Underdark without actually destroying your game.
Which brings the bigger question is, everything stamped with an expiration date from the drow.
Yeah.
Well, see, what was so funny is I believe, I can't remember exactly the whole deal, but I was certain that if you brought some of that ore up there and it was exposed, but no matter what, that particular magical item or whatever had to be subjected to that magical radiation or wherever it was in order for it to, you know, maintain its longevity. So one thing I remember specifically was the paladin finding a +4 longsword, and he wanted it so bad, so he took it and said, these players didn't know nothing about the radiation, so when they got back up finally, he sold his regular +3 longsword, got rid of it. And then after 2-3 days or however long it took, you know, the sword, of course, lost all its magical properties. He says, I want my +3 sword longsword back. Oh, I'm sorry, my friend. I sold that thing a long time ago. Yeah. You know, I sold that a day ago. It's gone. So
yes, yeah, the creative players would loot the Underdark and immediately run to the merchant that doesn't know any better and sell them.
Oh, that's messed up. Now that's wrong. Yeah. No, but yeah, that's kind of weird how that all works out and everything. So then and that's up to a, you know, it has to be adjudicated by a good DM. Yeah. Is this magical radiation actually magical, or is it something more like a scientific kind of issue? So that whereas, well, you take magic on that sword, but it doesn't radiate magic, even though it still acts like a +3 longsword or whatever the case may be.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it depends on how they want to deal with the radiation properties, whether it is magical or it's not. But I believe it says it is.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't recall. I think it's in the module where it discusses that. I'm not sure and everything. Yeah. But, you know, just to be on the fair side, you know.
Right. But in those limitations also explain why the drow never, like, attack the outer world. Why they never try to take over the rest of society when it seems like that's something they would do. Because none of their stuff would work.
Right.
Plus, they can't function in the sunlight to begin with, so...
Right.
Yeah, it's horrible. So that's why they only attack at night.
Yeah, that's why they need SPF 10,000 for their...
Yeah.
You know, that's funny because I remember now that we're talking about, you know, the older modules and everything. They had... You remember that wand of viscid globs or blobs or whatever it was?
Yeah, wand of viscous globes or whatever it is. Yeah,
that stuff was nasty. Now, that stuff was no joke. You got hit by that stuff, you're in trouble.
Oh, what's that other one? I'm trying to remember. Rods? Thank you. Tentacle rods.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's the one I was thinking of.
Yeah, right. they have some unique magical items, and I tell you, they should only be used in the hands of drow and you know, make them the foes they really are.
Sweet. Okay, tell us what you do with your campaigns and everything about drows, and I think that's going to wrap things up for this week. I hear a dog.
That was my dryer.
Oh, okay.
I keep a dryer around.
All right. So write us in, or if I staff at gmail.com, call us 570-865-4210. Talk about whatever you'd like. We'll play it on the air and comment about it. Go to Facebook, facebook.com, RFI Podcast. Go to rfipodcast.com. Am I missing anywhere?
OSR Gaming Forums.
Thank you. OSRGaming.org/forums. You can go there and chat it up with some lovely people, such as Will. Nick
was there. Hey, I was there today. I was actually there today.
He got up to 20 posts.
Whoa. Matt was always there, just floating around. And I'm always hidden somewhere. So I guess that'll keep it original, keep it old school, and drows with blunt cleric weapons. Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Get to the chopper. Good night.
Roll for initiative.